Welcome to Nightlife, the first hour.
On Christmas Day, in particular, thinking of all of the many traditions, and some of them are quite well known. I mean, you think about trimming the Christmas tree, trimming the ham, trimming the turkey. There are other ones that aren't trimming related as well, obviously, Christmas carols and the like. There's a lot of traditions that may be unique to your family. You know, some families sort of do that one present on Christmas Eve is allowed to be opened by everyone, a little way of getting a taster of what's coming the next day. There might be certain dishes that only make an appearance on the Christmas table or around this time of year. But a lot of the traditions are very steeped in history. They go back a very long way. And we're talking about things like the Yule log, the tree, the star, the angel on top of it, obviously. If you've got any Christmas traditions that you have in your household or you do with friends and family or anything in between, something that is only for you this time of year, love to hear about it. 1-300-800-222. You can text me at 0467-922-702. But I thought we'd actually take a bit of time right now as we kick off and have a chat with our first guest about Christmas traditions. Dr. James Lancaster, lecturer in studies in Western religious traditions at the University of Queensland, taking a bit of time out to spread some Christmas joy and, more importantly, Christmas knowledge as well. James, welcome to Nightlife.
Oh, thank you, Nick. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm really excited to talk about this. I'm going to sound like the most boring person alive here, but there's a biblical scholar I follow on social media called Dan McClellan, who at the moment has been fighting. He tends to sort of come in and do a bit of myth-busting and a bit of misinformation correcting. And a big one he's been fighting at the moment are people getting in touch and saying Christianity took the idea of the Christmas tree from early pagan nature worship. Now, my understanding is that that iconic symbol of Christmas, it's actually a pretty modern invention.
Yeah, that's correct, actually. He's right to defend the fact that early Christians did not take the tree from ancient pagan rituals. Although there are, you know, many religions that use trees in all sorts of ways, including in the ancient world. The Christmas tree is actually very modern. In fact, it dates back to the 17th century. So that's more than 1,600 years after the life of Christ. So it wasn't a tradition that was, you know, adopted by early Christians from ancient pagan practices at all. In fact, the tree is something that comes more out of early modern, let's say, Protestant German traditions in Europe.
One of the other ones I've heard is that we can actually thank Martin Luther for first decorating a tree when you talk about German Protestants and Reformation. Any of that accurate at all?
Yeah, well, I think that the kind of popular attribution of the Christmas tree to Martin Luther has to do with the fact that the, you know, the first kind of people to adopt the trees were Germans actually living in the Alsatian capital of Strasbourg in the 1600s. Martin Luther himself did not, it seems, invent the first Christmas tree. There was a story that arose posthumously, so following his death, about him having kind of been thinking about the birth of Christ and noticing a beautiful snow-covered tree from which he got the idea. But that's not, in fact, true. It seems to be a later invention.
At the risk of absolutely bombing here, can I tell you a quick joke I heard at university sort of many, many years
ago?
Sure. What's the difference between Martin Luther and someone finishing their PhD?
No idea.
Nothing. They're both nailing their theses.
That's right. Well, you know, you might be interested to learn that Martin Luther, he didn't actually nail the 95 theses.
No, what did he do?
I know that's another myth actually about Luther. So he arguably didn't nail anything. What he did, it seems, is to glue an announcement to the door of the castle church in Wittenberg saying that he planned to debate his 95 theses. So both the nailing and the thesis part seems to be inaccurate, unfortunately.
James, you need your own social media account to start doing your own busting at the moment, I think. So hang on. When does the idea of the Christmas tree as we know it begin to emerge? Mm.
Yeah, well, the Christmas tree, I suppose, as we know it, that is inside the house, because the first Christmas trees were, in fact, kind of paraded around outside the house. And it seems like they even had sausages and things thrown over them. This is a German tradition, so like bratwurst and things.
Just really quickly, when you say thrown over them, I'm imagining links of sausages like tinsel, but do you mean literally kind of flung over the top?
I think that's correct. Okay, yes, good. There are some later engravings that seem to show links of sausages thrown over trees.
Oh, sorry, keep going. I'm just, wow.
No, it's, I mean, Christmas has quite a wild history, actually. You wouldn't expect it, especially given that it's, you know, meant to celebrate the birth of Christ. But getting back to the tree, you know, it was the idea of the tree inside the house, you know, trimmed with decorations other than sausages and with presents underneath. That dates from about the 1830s to 50s. So, you know, while trees, as we mentioned before, were undoubtedly used as decorations and across kind of a variety of religions, the Christmas tree, at least as far as we would recognize it if we traveled kind of back through time, is only about 200 years old.
That is far more modern than I think many people, myself included, would have expected as well. So when we think of the tree, we think presents underneath it, and there's no idea of naughty or nice, either you're getting a gift under the tree or you're getting a big lump of coal instead. Is that part of a Christmas tree tradition, or has that been adopted from elsewhere and brought to the tree?
Well, so it seems like the idea of giving presents in at least a religious sense, not a secular sense, does originate at roughly the same time as the tree itself. We know that in Strasbourg, the Christmas tree was part of a kind of what was known as a judgment tradition on Christmas Day. And this was meant to teach naughty children about what would happen to them if they didn't behave themselves in hell. So it's much more serious than giving your children presents today, because essentially it was a learning opportunity. If they had been bad throughout the year, the parents would not leave them anything under the tree. And this would be kind of a sign of you know, the bad things that were to come. But if they were good, they would leave bonbons or lollies under the tree for them, which was a hint of the kind of pleasures they could enjoy in heaven if they behaved themselves.
So at what point does the Christmas tree start being right around the world? What's the tipping point for it to actually become as mainstream as it is today? Do we know?
Yeah, well, it's interestingly, it was a kind of German import into America. Germans, I mean, the tradition kind of spread with Goethe, the German poet. Wrote a book called The Sorrows of Young Werther in 1774, which kind of spread the idea, Alsatian idea, of the Christmas tree to more of Germany. But then Germans who moved particularly to Pennsylvania in the early 19th century brought the Christmas tree tradition with them. This then spread in America, and then really it's with kind of American globalization largely that America kind of exports the kind of modern commercial version of the tree that we get today. So probably around the turn of the 20th century that we start to see this happening.
We are taking a bit of time out on Christmas to do a bit of history diving, talking about some of the traditions that you and I know and love and where they actually originated. Helping us with that is Dr. James Lancaster, who is a lecturer in studies in Western religious traditions at the University of Queensland. Had no idea about this involvement of German romantic poetry as making the Christmas tree so popular, James.
Yeah, that's right. I think, when Goethe basically saw the tradition, he was, enchanted by it. I think, in addition to throwing links of sausages over the tree, they often put candles on the tree. And so, it was quite a heartwarming idea, especially in Northern Europe, where winters were extremely cold. And so the idea of kind of bringing a tree to life with light and kind of warming the season, both in a kind of literal sense of light, but metaphorically as signifying the birth of Christ, was a very attractive idea by the 19th century.
I'm not going to lie, you're getting me all hyped up for next year and coming up with some sort of charcuterie tree that I can amaze people with. I'm sure it'll be. Oh, that's not going to be popular at all. Yeah, no one's going to enjoy that at all. So, okay, let's go a bit further back in time then. When we weren't sort of lighting candles and decorating trees and trimming trees, what were we doing to celebrate Christmas? I keep hearing that it was maybe a little bit more rowdy than you and I might be used to.
Yeah, that's correct, actually. One thing that historians, more recently kind of figured out about Christmas pasts is that the majority of Christians spent Christmas in a celebrated as a kind of carnival atmosphere. So if you were religious, if you belonged to like a monastic community, then Christmas would be a more solemn affair, same as if you were part of the court. And many kind of Christmas carols come out of these traditions. But for the vast majority, of people living in Europe in the early modern period, it was actually a time to get drunk. Christmas basically falls at the exact same time as the ancient Roman festival of Saturnalia, which was the celebration of the god Saturn. Saturnalia was a harvest holiday, and so in Europe it falls at the time of the year when the crops have all been brought in, and now it's time for people to kind of enjoy their labors. And so it was a time of feasting, a time of drinking, and generally a time of what we call misrule, so behaving badly. And this really continued on throughout the Middle Ages and the early modern period for the kind of average person. So, some of the things you might do included kind of going out and knocking on the doors of more wealthy neighbors, demanding to be given a drink or food. This is actually known as wassailing. There's a famous song, "Here We Go, a Wassailing." And so you demand that they give you drink, usually, sometimes food. And if they didn't do that, you'd break their windows with rocks or cause other kind of damage to their property. And needless to say, many people did then give drinks to their less fortunate neighbors, which encouraged kind of all sorts of rowdiness. So, one of the interesting things that we find is childbirth kind of out of wedlock always increased dramatically in September and August, which means that Christmas, was genuinely a time for enjoying oneself. It was so rowdy, actually, that Oliver Cromwell and the Puritans in the 1650s in England actually officially outlawed Christmas, and they did so because Christmas was, in their mind, and perhaps rightly so, not a very Christian festival at all. It was simply a time to get drunk and have sex.
Now, see, my understanding of that had been that Cromwell was worried that some of the attributes of Christmas were just a little too Catholic for his tastes. I didn't realise it went more into an almost societal drama and misrule, as you said.
Yeah, well, I think that Catholicism was kind of associated more broadly with, you know, medieval tradition that had come before, and you could blame anything on Catholicism and Puritan, Puritan England. You know, everything wrong with society, with religion, was essentially, you know, something that had come from the Catholics. You know, there had probably been attempts in the Middle Ages to reform, you know, the average parishioner's experience of Christmas. But again, you're fighting an uphill battle here. If you think about Christmas today, you know, what most people like to do is, you know, sit back, have a beer or too many beers, and get a little rowdy, right? So things haven't changed that much, actually.
Saturnalia Festival still ongoing in a very muted way. No broken windows, no demanding food, more like being hoping to be invited around. And James, just back That's to fun. The tree, we talked a bit about sort of its America kind of getting it in through Germany, popularising it around the world. Obviously, you know, we're going to hear from King Charles III with a speech today, Christmas Day. I understand that when it came to England, there was a strong royal connection to it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So in England, the tree was first popularized by Victoria and Albert. And of course, Albert came from a German family, was a German descendant. The tree itself had actually been introduced into the court setting of George III and William IV in the 1830s. But it was really Victoria and Albert in 1840 who popularized it in the UK. So they set up a Christmas tree at Windsor. And this tree was then immortalized in the Illustrated London News in 1848. They had an engraving that showed Victoria, Albert, and all of the children kind of around a candlelit tree with something very, very new, which was glass ornaments. So if you think of glass kind of baubles or decorations, these would have been extraordinarily expensive and not something that kind of the average person could ever imagine even affording. But it gave this kind of warm, romantic image to the average kind of British person of what, you know, Christmas ideally looked like in the royal court.
So people tried to emulate that after this image. Is that what happened?
That's correct, yeah. And I mean, in the British context, you know, this was kind of an ideal. Some people began to, you know, bring Christmas trees indoors, but even so, it was largely kind of the import of American traditions around gift giving and the tree that later became popular in Britain. So one of the things that a lot of people complain about Christmas is that it's very commercial, but in some ways, you know, the commercialization of Christmas is what has made it popular and made the Christmas tree as popular as it is today. If we look at the origins of the modern Christmas tree in America, around the 1850s, booksellers in New York and Philadelphia started to pick up on the fact that, you know, Christmas trees were becoming increasingly popular with the young children. And so they started marketing their books to these young children as the ideal gift to put under the Christmas tree. And so the interesting thing is the way they did this is actually to write stories about Christmas. The Night Before Christmas, for instance, is one of these stories in which they showed children unwrapping books under a Christmas tree inside the house. And so the children then asked for books to be given to them on Christmas. And of course, then consumerism kind of takes off from there.
Dr. James Lancaster, you are just unfolding this for me and I'm really enjoying it. You touched on the decorations. When do we start seeing the top of the tree, the angel and the star mm-hmm. making an appearance?
Yeah, well, I think that this is probably quite early, definitely with the star. The star, of course, I think is an attempt to actually make the Christmas tree more Christian.
Yeah, I mean, they're the only things we've talked about that kind of directly relate to, you know, something associated with the birth of Christ.
Yeah, that's it. Well, if you think about you know the kind of biblical story of Christmas, then we get of course the star that guides the biblical magi with their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. For instance, in Matthew chapter 2. So there's no tree, you know, in the stable. There's no tree in the biblical camp, but there is a star. And I think kind of what happened is that the star was a way of linking Christ to the kind of modern emerging tradition of the tree. So you could therefore kind of baptize the tree as a truly Christian kind of symbol by putting a star on top of it.
When so thinking of Australia and Christmas and having as a child, you know, sat through Christmas days where it was easily 42, 43 degrees yeah. outside.
Yeah.
When did the tree, such a Northern Hemisphere idea, when did it come to Australia? Was that along with First Fleet or later on or?
Yeah, that's correct. It seems to have actually come over with the First Fleet, as far as we know. But the details are you know, we don't have any details really at all. So what exactly they did? I mean, Christmas certainly was celebrated, probably in the rowdy tradition on the First Fleet, as one can imagine. I don't think it was a particularly pious experience. You know, I think in Australia what we see, and there are some interesting kind of early photographs in the National Archives that show kind of early Australian Christmas trees from really the late 1800s, and they show, you know, kind of coniferous trees, the attempt to make trees or cut down trees that essentially are similar to those in the Northern Hemisphere, and to kind of decorate them really in the British style. So probably following the tradition established by Victoria and Albert. So I think at first the attempt was to mimic, you know, Christmas as experienced in the UK, you know, with the kind of traditional roast, the kind of Christmas tree as it appeared in a kind of Northern Hemisphere context. But one can only speculate that over time, you know, Australians decided that it was too hot, you know, to cook, you know, in the same way that, you know, while, you know, we still have, you know, very similar kind of Christmas trees, but, you know, the tradition in Australia kind of went more outside rather than inside. Whereas in America and Europe, interestingly, the kind of early modern medieval Christmas tradition was more outside. So again, it was about going outside, getting drunk, you know, knocking on people's doors. And for kind of American Puritans, they said, well, let's bring the tree inside. And by doing this, we'll keep our kids inside and out of the way of harm and, you know, getting drunk and having children out of wedlock. But in Australia, I think when that came over, people realized, well, actually, it's way too hot inside, so let's take it back outside again, where hopefully it will be a little bit cooler.
James, I want to touch on some of the food traditions in a second, but really quickly, we haven't mentioned the big man in red. We haven't mentioned Santa and when he starts making an appearance in Christmas yet.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, there's of course the tradition of Saint Nick, and you know, some of my colleagues have written about Saint Nick as being a kind of medieval Christian figure, a saint who kind of gave gave gifts to children. Saint Nick kind of got adopted into the Dutch tradition as Sinterklaas, and then through Dutch immigrants into the United States, and became Kris Kringle, or in the UK, Father Christmas, or Santa Claus. And Santa Claus then became a good way of explaining kind of where gifts came from. So this also relates again to kind of the booksellers and stories like The Night Before Christmas. So to give you an example, there's a book published in 1845 called Kris Kringle's Christmas Tree. And, you know, in this story, it depicts this early kind of Santa Claus, Kris Kringle, basically delivering swords and drums and books, right, to children under the tree. And this is a way of kind of both parents, but also booksellers, publishers, toy makers, kind of accounting for why we get gifts on Christmas Day in a secular sense. So instead of saying, if you don't get gifts, it's because you're going to hell, and if you do, it's a foretaste of heaven. Kind of bringing in Santa Claus or Kris Kringle was, and associating it with the Christmas tree was a way of kind of toning it down a little bit, and I suppose making it more appeasing for, in a secular context.
That is quite a tone down, and I might be getting my saints confused, so please just jump in if I'm losing the track on this one. But isn't St. Nicholas patron saint of children because he resurrected them from a butcher's vat? I seem to remember seeing that in an illuminated manuscript.
No, that's correct. I mean, the earlier kind of, most saints either did things that were, you know, today slightly shocking, or were martyred or killed in ways that are incredibly shocking today. You know, funny enough, there's actually even an early gospel. So in addition to the four kind of canonical gospels that we have in the New Testament, there are, you know, many, many other gospels that were not included and were written in kind of diverse Christian communities. And one of these is called the Infancy Gospel of Thomas. And if, you know, we don't know the exact dates, but it's probably early second century. So not too much longer after the kind of canonical gospels were written. But in this gospel, it kind of recounts the life of Jesus, and as a child, and he's essentially a kind of holy terror. So he gets up to all the things, but even worse that children would do. So to give you an example, he's playing with some children on the, you know, I guess he's around 10 or 11 years old on the roof, of a house, and one of the kids trips and falls off and dies. And all the parents come around and they said, Jesus did this. Jesus pushed our kid off the roof. And so Jesus resurrects the kid from the dead on the spot. So that the kid says, no, mommy, no, daddy, Jesus didn't push me.
So is this part of the Apocrypha?
Yeah, that's right. So it's a Gnostic gospel. So there are all sorts of wonderful, wonderful stories about, you know, kids and resurrections. But again, they tend to be the kind of stuff that is not mainstream, and for a reason, I think.
Dr. James Lancaster, we're getting into the weeds on this one. I might drag it back a little bit to food, because, I mean, in Australia, you touched on it, we head outside and we tend to have lighter meals, although there will still be many homes that sat down to ham, turkey and all the trimmings as per usual. When did that sort of food start being associated with Christmas, and things like Christmas cake and Christmas pudding? Where did that come out of?
Yeah, so, I mean, with the kind of ham and turkey and the roast, that is, I mean, in the United States, that was traditionally associated with Thanksgiving. And in the 19th century, as, you know, Thanksgiving is quite close to Christmas, the idea of simply kind of replicating the Thanksgiving meal, sometimes in a lesser form, on Christmas Day, so not kind of going to the extreme, was adopted. I mean, it was a meal that warmed the household. Mm. I mean, by having by cooking the ham or the turkey, you had a kind of roast going for hours that would actually keep, you know, a house warm in the winter months. So, I mean, I think it's probably a combination of different factors, but again, it would have been a kind of popular and also somewhat indulgent meal for kind of Americans in the 19th century that has just continued on in tradition.
Which is why, is, you know, we think of the Christmas goose and, of course, Dickens. That was, I guess, an associated foodstuff in England.
That's correct, yeah. And it was quite similar, actually. Charles Dickens, and you know, he very much kind of continued to popularize the kind of Christmas, romantic notion of Christmas that Victoria and Albert had kind of brought over to the UK.
I have to ask before I let you go, and you should go and spend some time with family. You've been incredibly generous with your time, James. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. No worries.
How do you spend your Christmas Day? Are you a traditionalist? Do you see a few different people? What do you actually do, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, so we're pretty, maybe you'd say traditional in the sense of a post-war kind of Christmas, so very much the secular Christmas. You know, we have the tree, you know, we have the meal, the presents for the kids, the family time, but not in a particularly religious way. And I think that's actually one of the things about Christmas that's quite fascinating, is that, you know, if you look at just how kind of little religion was actually present in the way in which people celebrated Christmas throughout, you know, the last 2,000 years, you know, you can see that even in the modern kind of commercialized Christmas, it doesn't have to be spent in a religious way. Of course, for Christians, it's a very, you know, holy and important day. But, you know, I know, you know, Buddhists, for instance, who have Christmas trees, you know, Muslims who celebrate Christmas, non-religious people who celebrate Christmas. It's kind of almost continued on as being a tradition that can be adopted by everybody. And that kind of makes it very well suited to, you know, a kind of modern multicultural Australia.
Something that everyone could participate in. James, thank you so very much, and a very Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Thank you so much, Nick.
The very wonderful Dr. James Lancaster, very generous with his time on a Christmas Day. He's a lecturer in studies in Western religious traditions at the University of Queensland, just running through some of the background to some of the traditions that you and I may adhere to. And this
cricket on. Boxing Day cricket returns with the fourth Ashes test between Australia and England. Hear every ball of the cricket all summer long.
The Ashes.
On 702 ABC Radio Sydney.
Don't be afraid to let me know, just how has your day gone? Just have a chat with me today. 1300 800 222. Texting instead on 0467 922 702. Christina in Sydney, Merry Christmas to you.
Yes, a very nice Christmas to everybody, to you as well. Thank you.
Have you had a lovely day?
Yes, absolutely. I'm actually exhausted. It's been a very busy day from 6 o'clock this morning till a little while ago.
Lots of family then, Christina.
They're all good. Now, what I was going to tell you is my sister rang me yesterday. She takes her Christmas very seriously. She celebrates Christmas on the 24th, and she takes her Christmas tree very, very seriously. They decorate it, and it's beautiful. Definitely not with sausages, that's for sure. That was the first time I've ever heard it. But they go so much trouble. And then she played me, of course, Silent Night over the telephone.
Oh.
And I thought to myself, many years ago, I found a manuscript which this fella, I think it was Joseph Moore, his name, he wrote it in, I think, in 1816. He didn't have anything, but they found this manuscript of Silent Night.
And
that's the way they, it, and it became, of course, one of the very important songs, didn't it?
Oh, one of the ones we think of straight away if someone says think of a Christmas song. Christmas Carol, obviously.
Actually, I've got this, I have got a copy, you know, I mean, it's looks like handwriting on it, you know, and it's supposed to be in his handwriting, but I haven't got anything else, you know. But I'll ring up and I just put and just tell you that. And it's something a little different, isn't it?
It's very different. And what a beautiful thing to have, especially in his handwriting. I mean, that's a lovely possession.
Yes. And I keep scrapbooks. I got a great big, two big scrapbooks, and I keep all sorts of things. Actually, I found also this has got nothing to do with Christmas, but that goes back to actually Marlene Dietrich as far as that. And I've got things there which are very unusual too, you know?
You're a collector then of just sort of rarities.
Yes, interesting things. I am very interested in a lot of things, sort of. My children and family, they think, well, this is crazy, but I think I like it. In other words, whatever floats your boat, in other words.
I think that's a very good way of putting it. And, you know, if you enjoy the collections, if it's something nice to have for you, well, keep doing it, Christina.
I am. You know, I've been doing it. Actually, I started fairly late to do these things. And, I'm very happy that I did, put it that way. And, I'm getting old too. I mean, I'm 88 years of age, mind you. And so, you know, I don't know how much time I've got to collect.
Well, you sound very spry and on the ball, Christina. I think you might have a few more years.
You know, I've done all sorts of things. So I just hope God gives me the gift to continue on as long as one keeps its mind in active. It matters, doesn't it?
It does. You've got to be occupied. And I think, you know, your collections, your passions are going to be keeping you young by the sounds of it.
Well, this is, some people smoke, others don't drink. Well, I collect interesting things and you come across so many interesting people. That's the thing. I meet the most extraordinary people. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, when it rains, you can go and get the things out and everything. I have got a story. That's the thing I like.
A story for everything, and you do meet interesting people as well. Christina, it's been fantastic to meet you, and thank you very much. Christina in Sydney sharing not only the tale of how seriously her sister takes the Christmas trees, very seriously indeed, but of course some of her collections as well. Now, Anton texted in from Coolbillup, and I hope I'm saying that right, Anton, saying Christmas greetings to all of those who spent Christmas alone as I did. God bless. Anton, it can be very hard spending Christmas Day by yourself. There's been a couple of years I've had to do it. It can be a bit of a sad day, particularly for many people. And I hope you're okay. Don't be afraid to give a call and have a chat. And Peter might need a bit of help here. So, Peter, thank you for texting in. Peter says, my Christmas Day was partly ruined by having Last Christmas by Wham on repeat in my mind throughout the entire day. I mean, that is the earworm of all earworms on Christmas Day. Peter says, are there any cures known? It would be much appreciated if you can help on that one.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.